Welcome to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga. I'm joined by Cleveland.com's Tribe beat writer, Paul Hoynes. Just got back from Detroit and getting ready to head out to Houston. Paul, good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, Joe. How you doing, man?
Doing real well. The Tribe got back on the winning track in the last game of the Detroit series. So not feeling too terrible heading into Houston, but we're looking at, you know, a team that's still under 500 and leading the division as they get ready to take on one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah, definitely not the way they wanted to go into Houston and then Chicago to play the Cubs after that. This is a five-game stretch, and then they come home to Houston again too. So this is going to be a tough stretch for them against elite caliber teams. And right now they do not fit into that category. I think you see some signs that they're coming around. Offensively they've had a great May. They scored the most runs in the American League, leading the league in batting average in May. The rotation remains sound, second best ERA in the American League. Defensively, they played decently, not great. But the bullpen, Joe, the bullpen is terrible. And if you can't get the bullpen straightened out, everything goes to waste in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. If you can't have your starters throw 120 pitches a game in May. I mean, they'll have nothing left in August and September. You're just defeating the whole purpose of that great rotation. So they've got to find a way to get this bullpen corrected.
And how long is that going to be a concern, the starters throwing more pitches? We've seen they're averaging about 10 more pitches a game since the Andrew Miller situation, him going on the DL and Tito sort of relying on the starters a little more to go a little longer to stay away from that bullpen that's been struggling. How long before that something like that catches up, or we're going to have to see guys coming up and getting spot starts and getting a little more rest extension like that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Maybe think about going to a six-man rotation. You bring up a guy that can fill in if the bullpen doesn't get straightened out. And I think it kind of curtails their strategy as well. They've got an off day today. They've got an off day Monday, and usually you probably skip your fifth starter then. But you don't want to skip Tomlin now if. You're not getting any kind of production out of the bullpen. I mean, guys like Kluber, Carrasco, those guys can handle it. Bauer, this is made to order for him. But a guy like Clevinger, you got to be cautious with him. I think he's thrown more than 100 pitches for his last four starts. And, his workload has jumped really taking a big jump from last year. And, you want this guy fresh in August and September. So you're going to really have to, Francona's really going to have to manage this rotation and this bullpen and find a way to ease the burden on this team. I mean, on the rotation. Right now, the bullpen has thrown the fewest innings in the American League. And, that's not the formula for success.
It's not because the everything's going great and your bullpen is throwing fewer innings. It's because the team's trying to avoid going to the bullpen. Yeah. There's a difference between
They've got an armed guard in front of the bullpen gate. They're not letting anybody out of that thing.
Well, it's curious you mentioned going to that six-man rotation. A possibility to bring somebody up. We saw Adam Plutko, who pitched the second game of that doubleheader against Toronto and did very well. Last night for Triple A Columbus, he had another strong outing, six innings, one earned run, eight strikeouts, I think one walk. I mean, this is the kind of stuff you want to see from Plutko. And if he's come up to Cleveland once and done the job, what's keeping Francona from bringing him up and giving him another look?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a possibility. In the past when I've talked to, Francona and Chris Antonetti about it, they have poo-pooed the six man rotation. They said they probably only go to it if, you know, their start, if there was an injury or their starters really needed the rest. And, you know, I think, you know, that's something they're going to have to look at. Maybe they don't, not in the first half, maybe, but after the second half when, you know, things stabilize a little bit and they see where they are in the division, maybe get, you know, are able to put some distance between themselves and the rest of the pack in the AL Central. But, you know, I think it's something they've got to think about.
What's the clock and what does the time frame look like before Antonetti and Chernoff start looking elsewhere for that arm to bolster the bullpen, to get a guy in who's going to maybe come in and be that seventh, eighth bridge guy to get to Miller and Allen? And, you know, we threw out, we did a post earlier in the week, candidates for that as a possibility, guys that are out there who could help the bullpen right now, who may or may not be available before July. Kelvin Herrera from Kansas City is probably the class of that group, you know, the guy who's probably going to demand the most in terms of prospects or major league ready guys. What's the window and how long are the Indians going to wait? Will they wait all the way into July or will they make a move before that?
You know, Antonetti told me that this isn't the time to make a deal yet. You know, and I think, but, you know, knowing them, I'm sure they're out there looking right now. You know, I think, you know, they're trying to, you know, money, I think, is a problem. You know, they can't, you know, they can't inherit too much of a contract, a big contract. So if they do go out and get a guy, it means they're going to have to give up better prospects. And so that team that's trading the reliever, you know, would take the better prospects and eat some of the salary. So I think, you know, that's probably the state they're in right now. But knowing them, and I think they're always, you know, they're looking forward. You know, they've known this could happen. They've known it since, you know, they broke camp when, you know, they made the decision, you know, to try to fill Shaw's spot and Joe Smith's spot with the guys they had in the pen. And it hasn't worked out. So, you know, I'm sure they've got a short list of people. I'm sure they're looking at it, but it is a little early. Maybe this thing gets straightened out internally. But if not, they're going to have to go out and get some outside help.
Can they stay afloat until July, until the trading deadline comes around and be in a good position before that, before a move like that happens?
You know, that's a great question, Joe. I don't know. I mean, you know, the Twins can't get out of their own way. They keep getting guys hurt. Santana's not back. They just lost their catcher for Castro for the rest of the year for knee surgery. You know, the Tigers, you know, I like the way they play. They're aggressive. They're young. But, you know, they have bullpen problems too. Their bullpen might be almost as bad as the Indians. So, and their pitching is suspect. You know, I think they can stay afloat. But it's not going to be pretty. There's going to be a lot of games like those three games in Detroit. You know, 9-8 games, 6-2 games, games where you know you've got a chance late and the bullpen comes in and blows it up. And you know, those are the things I think they're going to have to live with, and then the Indians and Terry Francona are going to have to live with until they find a solution.
The great elixir and the great cure-all salve is the fact that they play in the AL Central and no team is really sort of chasing them down other than the Twins, you know, and like you said, the Twins have their own struggles to deal with. Let's take a look at this weekend and into next week. You mentioned the Indians are traveling to Houston. They will take on the Astros. The Astros pretty much they're the defending world champions. And right now the class of the AL West, they're going to avoid Justin Verlander, who last night threw a three-hit shutout at the Angels in Anaheim. So, you know, I guess that's one good way to look at it. I believe they also avoid Alex Cobb as well, correct?
Right. They're not going to face Jared Cole. They won't face Verlander. Yeah. So that, you know, they miss those guys. But I don't know. Given the history, the Indians' history they have against Verlander, I don't know if that's a plus or a minus. They've hit him well in the past and in the recent past, but he's been pitching great since he went to Houston. So, you know, they'll face Morton, Keuchel, and McCullers, you know, over the weekend. They're sending Clevinger, Kluber, and Carrasco to the hill against those guys. So they got their three of their horses going. It should be, you know, an interesting series. If both teams pitch, both rotations pitch like they have been through the, you know, the course of the early season, we could see some very fast games. I mean, under 230, because both those guys, you know, both those rotations have really pitched well.
Come on, you're playing at Minute Maid Park. That place is a launching pad. Those games aren't going to be, you know, one run, two run games.
That's right.
It's always interesting to look at the whenever the Indians face Houston, the matchup of the two shortstops, two young Puerto Rican superstars in Francisco Lindor and Carlos Correa, two very different Mays, I guess you might want to put it that way. Ever since the calendar flipped to May, Francisco Lindor has been pretty much one of the best players in baseball at the plate. Maybe not defensively with the glove, but Lindor is definitely more than making up for it at the plate. While Carlos Correa in May has been pretty much garbage. hitting below 200 and, you know, he's the exact opposite of what Lindor has been. These two guys, they're buddies. They've played together on the World Baseball Classic team. They know each other real well. What can we expect out of the two of them in this weekend series?
Well, I think they probably bring the best out of each other. I would imagine they'll have lunch one over the weekend. Maybe they're having it on the off day today. But, you know, they're good friends. And, you know, physically, I always marvel at the difference. You know, Correa is a big guy, you know, and Frankie Lindor is smaller, you know, Omar Vizquel size. But the power Lindor generates, he's just been on fire. It's like you said, Joe, in May, he had the 15-game hitting streak. Now, let me give you a little story. I went up to him. You know, I think Monday he extended the streak to 15 games in his last at bat. So after the game, I went up and said, "Frankie, do you think about the streak?" He goes, "What streak?" And he goes, "Don't talk to me again." So, and then the next day he gets moved to the cleanup spot, walks four times, and the streak ends. So then he came back the next day, he walked by me, he says, "Hoynesy, I'm not talking to you anymore."
I'm a veteran
writer should not have asked them that.
you jinxed the streak. What are
you're
you
not
do?
Kidding, man. That's the kiss of death.
Well, you talk about the size of Correa and the size of Lindor, but Lindor came into spring training and he's noticeably bigger. He hit the weights in the off season. So, you know, he went through the whole season answering questions. "Oh, I'm not a power hitter. I'm not this and that." A year he hit 30 home runs. You know, this year he's on pace and you know, looking like – is he a power hitter now? They dropped him to the four spot in the series in Detroit when Encarnacion had the back issues. But, you know, this is a guy who might just turn out to be a 30 home run a year guy.
Yeah, I mean, that would be amazing for a shortstop. You know, you're talking guys like Cal Ripken and Garcia Parra.
Alex Rodriguez when he was younger.
Alex Rodriguez, yeah. Those are big guys, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Garcia Parra not so much, but Ripken and A-Rod are huge. So, you know, but, you know, I don't know if that's the way the game has changed, Joe. You know, the launch angle thing, and, you know, Frankie's not trying to hit the ball the other way. And it looks like when he, you know, in certain counts, there's no doubt about it, he's swinging for his heels. And that was one of the interesting things, you know, after I think in Cleveland, he had a big game and he was saying, you know, it's embarrassing when you're 5'10 or 5'9, weigh 185, 190 pounds, and you come up to the plate, and the defense is shifted around to the right side of the field on you. You know, like you're like you become a pull hitter, and or the, you know, he's a switch hitter, so whichever side of the plate he's batting from. So, you know, I saw he said he made a concerted effort to start spraying the ball around, and that's what's led to his big maze. So, you know, but still, you know, as Francona says, this guy, you know, has gotten enough at bats where he knows where he can take a shot, where he knows he, you know, there's a chance what pitch he can handle and maybe hit out of the ballpark. And I think, you know, Jose Ramirez is a lot like that too. Ramirez, you know, as of yesterday, was tied for the major league lead in home runs with 13. And these guys aren't Albert Bell. You know, they don't look like right. Albert Bell. They're switch hitters. They're infielders, and the power they generate is something else. It's really fun to watch.
Well, just like you said, for an example of, you know, knowing what they're going to get in a certain count, and then really trying to hit that ball out. Ramirez's 13th home run, you know, he got himself into a count where I think it was a 3-1 count, and he knew he was going to get a fastball, and he got a fastball in and turned on it. I mean, that was a perfect example of what you just said, of, you know, these guys knowing what they're going to get and doing the most with that pitch. All right. So as far as just to wrap up Houston and the look forward, big difference in between the two teams, obviously the bullpen, you know, Houston right now, probably has a tremendous edge in the bullpen. What do the Indians need to do to take 2 out of 3 or sweep the series in Houston?
Well, they've got to, you know, their starting pitchers have to, you know, really give them some length. They got to get into the seventh inning. They've got to get, you know, seventh inning. And when the bullpen does get in there, you know, Andrew Miller has to pitch better, you know, and you have to limit, hopefully they can limit the number of middle relievers they have to use in the game. You know, you get, maybe you get to the seventh or eighth and you can go Miller, Allen. But, you know, the thing that scares me, Joe, is that Miller and Allen haven't pitched that much. And those are both guys that have to pitch a lot, especially Allen. And, you know, he's maybe had 3 appearances in the last 10, 12, 13 days. And that's it just, you know, I don't know if they, you know, they really rode him hard in that little stretch against the Yankees and stuff. And if they were trying to give him a breather, but, you know, he pitched well yesterday, you know, in the kind of the blowout game. But so it's going to be interesting to see how they pitch. But and offensively, they're going to have to keep, you know, scoring runs. And I think runs are going to be hard to come by against that Houston's pitching staff. But, you know, what I liked, Joe, is how they not only generated runs from the top of the order, you know, from Lindor and Brantley, but from how the bottom of the order has produced with Eric Gonzalez. You know, Kipnis had a double yesterday. Even, you know, Roberto Perez got into the act. So I think that, you know, they've got to get some production from all parts of the lineup. You know, two nights ago, Guyer hit a grand slam. So, you know, that those are all good signs, I think.
All right. Let's focus now at the end of the week, the beginning of next week. The Indians are going to go to Chicago. And it's a funny point that came up last weekend as Mike Clevinger was getting ready to make his start on Saturday. And he came in, he got a notice from the league on Friday about his cleats, his unique, brightly colored floral pattern. I think he has sunflowers and you know, some other unique flowers on them and the names of his daughters. He's worn them all season so far, but the league wants him to change the cleats because they don't conform. They're not 51% of you know, team color to make them part of the uniform. So Clevinger's response was, "Yeah, I'm gonna make the best out of it, but you know, this is what the league is trying to do. They're cracking down on all the fun. They say have fun, but then they say don't do this, don't do that." Is this just another sort of symptom of the league picking fights where they don't need to, or is this something that you see as, you know, a uniform's a uniform and you have to, you know, conform?
Yeah, you know, I think I would have loved to see if Clevinger pitched in the 60s. I think that's what his whole goal is, just to kind of go back in time, find some wormhole in time and go back and pitch in the 60s and 70s. Well,
Clevinger will talk about wormholes in space-time, but that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, but I think, you know, Joe, I think it's, you know, it's, you know, the uniform police are out. You know, Clevinger's an easy target with the hair, the tattoos, the shoes. Maybe somebody complained. You know, we've seen it happen. We saw it happen last year with his glove. They complained about the color of his glove. So, you know, and you know, to be fair to Major League Baseball, you know, this, the uniform code was agreed upon in the basic agreement. Both sides agreed on it. So you're supposed to follow it. But, I've got to wonder if there aren't bigger issues to follow here. I mean, you've got Robinson Cano getting banged for 80 games for a steroid or a masking agent, and they're still going after guys for wearing, you know, psychedelic shoes. So I'm not sure, that is a front issue burner.
Right. And, you know, you've got Manfred making the big case about pace of play and all that. And, you know, you've got bullpen carts in Arizona and all sorts of crazy stuff in response to it. But Clevinger's sort of takeaway from the whole thing was, you know, hey, I'm a guy who's got, tattoos on my arm, that come down past his sleeve. And, you know, they're bright colored flowers on his tattoo sleeve on his arm. He's like, what's next? Do I have to wear long sleeves or cover that up? But where does the sort of policing and where does that sort of, that attitude sort of stop? And how much give back do the players have to go through in order to, you know, conform to what the league is saying?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, if it is a distraction to the hitter, you know, if it is a distraction to the hitter, it's, you know, the pitcher has an advantage. So, you know, we saw that, you know, I saw that, you know, several years ago when Omar had a problem with the diamond earrings. Arthur Rhodes. Arthur Rhodes, yeah, when he was pitching for Seattle, and it touched off a bases-clearing brawl. So, I mean, if a hitter wants to bring it to the attention of the umpire, I think that escalates things. But so far, you know, it hasn't happened. And, you know, I think I remember there was a Toronto pitcher that had to wear sleeves because his tattoos were distracting. But maybe we've moved on. That was a few years ago. But maybe we've moved on because everybody has tattoos.
Nowadays, half the pitchers in the league have our arm sleeve tattoos. So,
yeah.
And just to leave you with what Clevinger's point was, it's like, if a major league hitter can't hit because of my tattoos, then he's not – guys aren't in the big leagues who can't hit with, you know, tattoos or cleats or anything like that. Guys who are distracted by that, that they're not major league hitters. So,
well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, remember Dennis Martinez. Dennis Martinez knew every trick in the book. He did everything. And there were times when Dennis on his pitching arm under his uniform would wear his white undershirt would be showing an inch below his uniform sleeve. And that was to distract a hitter. And you don't know what's going to distract a hitter. And Dennis did it on purpose. I mean, and he had to change it a couple times because people complained. So, you know, it's all about perception and, you know, who kind of does the squeaky wheel get the grease, you know? And if a hitter's going to complain, that, you know, maybe that would take it to the next level. But right now, I would imagine Clevinger's going to get another letter. Maybe he gets fined. And we'll have to see what his attire is Friday night in Houston.
It'll be interesting to see. Maybe he comes out with Minute Maid Park. Maybe he comes out with, like, giant oranges painted on his shoes or something like that. We'll never know. All right, Hoynes, you travel safe to Houston. We'll look forward to reading up your reports from the series there in Houston and then on to Chicago. And we'll see you again when the Tribe and the Astros open up a weekend series back here next week.
All right, Joe. Thanks, man.